Mendoza.
By this point in the Christmas season, chances are you have received countless cards and letters for Christmas. And they usually come in a couple different categories. You've probably received a bunch of those picture collages from people. Got a bunch of those. If you get the actual cards, those usually come in a couple different categories as well. You got your general winter wonderland theme. You know, you got the starry night with snow and barren trees. Or you get the commercial Christmas theme. You know, you get the Christmas tree, you got the presents, you got Santa Claus, whatever. Then you get the religious cards as well. Those are heavy in angels. Sometimes they're the angels that are the overweight white babies with wings, and they're disturbing on a couple different levels. Or you get star over Bethlehem kind of thing, or maybe you get shepherds, or maybe it's a manger scene. Possibly you've seen this card, maybe you even received this card. The card that's got the wise men on it. And above the wise men, it says these words: wise men still seek him. If you haven't at least gotten that card, chances are you've seen that sign somewhere over this last month. Wise men still seek him. It's an okay phrase. It's just incomplete. Now, for starters, I mean, the idea of wise men still seek him, it fits into the story well. I mean, the wise men came from the east. They were seeking the one that had been born king of the Jews. And so they go to Herod, who's the king. Seems like a really smart place to go look for a new king in a palace. Herod goes, no baby born here, sorry. They talk to a couple other people. They go, oh, we're supposed to be in Bethlehem. They go down to Bethlehem. They see this child and they worship him. And so this whole phrase, wise men still seek him, comes from that part of the story. These wise men were actually seeking who turned out to be Jesus. So wise men still seek him. Again, it's a nice phrase. It's just incomplete. Wise men seek him, and it's a good idea for us to be seeking Jesus, I suppose. But don't stop there. See, the wise don't simply seek Jesus. They are ultimately changed by Jesus. It's interesting, if you look at the Christmas story, every individual in the story that meets Jesus has the direction of their life literally changed. I don't know if you ever recognized that before in the story. Shepherds, they're out in the fields, they're taking care of sheep. That's their job. But then they're told by the angels to go into town, and they go and they meet Jesus. But what's interesting is that if you read the story, they don't immediately go back to the fields. They go out into the streets and start telling people about what they saw. They met Jesus and they were changed. The direction of their life changed. Then there's Mary and Joseph. They came to Bethlehem, and in Bethlehem they met Jesus too. But if you know the rest of the story, you know that they came from Nazareth, came to Bethlehem, but they didn't go back to Nazareth. Herod was trying to kill all the babies, and so instead of going back to where they came from, they went to Egypt. Mary and Joseph met Jesus, and literally the direction of their life went to a new place. And then you get the wise men. They were told by Herod, after you find the child, go back to Herod, tell him where the child is. But having been warned in a dream, they do not go back. They were told to go home by a different route, and so they did. Three groups of people met Jesus. Every one of them ended up changing the direction of their life. Wise men don't simply seek Jesus. People that are wise seek him and then are humble enough and courageous enough to allow their life to be changed by him. Problem is, and here's the thing. During Christmas, people feel more free to talk about Jesus-y stuff because, you know, Christ Mass, that whole thing. But the problem is, when people start talking about Jesus, they end up getting, I don't know, uncomfortable talking about Jesus, and they conclude they don't really like Jesus. But it's not that they don't like Jesus, they just don't like Christians. And I gotta tell you, most of the time I don't blame them. We've kind of earned this whole, really? Why do I want to be like you? My best friend growing up with a guy named Richard, most of my life I called him Turtle. It's a long story. I'll tell you some other time. Turtle did not like Christianity. Not a fan of Christianity at all. And we used to get into it every now and again about this whole Christianity thing. And Turtle's problem with Christianity was this. He goes, it's a bunch of hypocrites, judgmental, narrow-minded jerks. And I hated to admit it, but too often he was right. But we got into it one day, and we're talking about this, and, you know, he was looking at all the televangelists, and they were just going out for money, and then they were having all these sexual scandals and all that kind of stuff. He's like, look at that. Why do I want to be like that? And I said, Turtle, do you like baseball? He goes, you know I do. I go, it's a beautiful game, isn't it, Turtle? He goes, I love baseball. I go, yeah, it's a beautiful game. 90 feet between the bases, 60 feet, 6 inches from the mound to the plate. Three strikes, you're out. Three outs ends the inning. 27 outs makes 9 innings, and there's no ties like soccer. I mean, it is, it's a beautiful game, isn't it? And he goes, I love baseball. And I looked at him, I go, can we agree that Steve Howe is an idiot? If you don't know who Steve Howe was, he was a pitcher back in the 80s. He was a poster child for drug abuse among baseball players. He was banned from baseball like 4 or 5 different times. He was a poster child for drug abuse in baseball. And I looked at Turtle, I go, can we agree that Steve Howe is an idiot? And he goes, yeah. I go, Turtle, sometimes the players are idiots. Sometimes the players are a mess, but it doesn't change the fact that the game is beautiful. I go, I got to give it to you, man. Sometimes the Christians are a mess. Sometimes the Christians are kind of idiots. I'll give you that. The Crusades, the Inquisition, the way Christians have over the centuries used the Bible to justify slavery. I'll give it to you, Turtle. Sometimes the Christians are a mess. But Jesus is beautiful. I go, if you want to have at the Christians, go for it. We deserve it. But Jesus is good to go. And I tell people, I say, you know what? If you got a problem with Christians, fair enough. But don't judge Jesus based on the Christians. Go actually look at Jesus. The Sermon on the Mount, most famous sermon ever preached. Matthew's chapter 5, 6, 7. I go read that. Go read that and just ask yourself this question. What would the world look like if the people in the world actually lived the way Jesus talked about? I'll tell you what would happen. The very direction of our world would change. What if we actually did what Jesus said when he said that the greatest commandment was to love God, love other people? And then he would later add a new commandment, I give you, love one another as I have loved you. How would the world be different if we did that? The direction of the world would change. I love what Gandhi once said. He goes, I like your Christ. It's your Christians I don't like. Your Christians are so unlike your Christ. Now, here at Community Covenant Church, we're trying to live more like Jesus. We're trying. We screw up plenty of times, but we're trying to be authentic. We're trying just to follow Jesus because we've concluded he's worth following. But if you want to have somebody worth following, don't look at us. Look at the child that came in the manger. Look at the one that would grow up and say the words of the Sermon on the Mount. Look at the one that would touch the hurting, reach out to the outcast. Look at the one that would go to a cross, die, and look at the one who would come back from the dead. Because when you look at Jesus, then all of a sudden you can start hearing the way Brennan Manning puts it. You can start hearing Jesus say, do you believe that I love you? That I love you beyond worthiness and unworthiness? That I love you beyond fidelity and infidelity? That I love you in the morning sun and in the evening rain? That I love you even when your intellect denies it, your emotions refuse it, and your whole being rejects it? Do you believe that I love you without condition or regret? And I love you in this moment as you are and not how you should be. Sometimes Christians are a bit of a mess. But Jesus is beautiful. My prayer for you, my prayer for me, this Christmas, is that you'll be able to enjoy family and friends and eat more food than is healthy. I mean, that you'll be able to do all those things. That tomorrow morning is just this unwrapping explosion. I hope you have all those things because that's really fun. But I hope in the midst of all of the Christmas stuff, you'll have at least one quiet moment when you think about the Jesus we claim to celebrate. And as soon as you start to get kind of tweaked because of what you've seen Christians do, go, you know what? I'm not going to look at that. I'm going to look at the Jesus part. And my prayer is that in that moment, you'll be overwhelmed with the love of God made visible in a manger and then ultimately on a cross. And may that be the greatest gift you've ever received. Would you pray with me, please? Lord, you are good and your mercy endures forever. And for that, we give you thanks. God, thank you for giving us a chance to come together tonight and to sing and to laugh and to wonder. God, for those of us that call ourselves your followers, help us to live lives that are increasingly dependent upon you. Lives that are marked by generosity and compassion, humility and courage. Father, for those that tonight, this whole Christian thing is just a little odd. God, I ask that you would help them get past the mess that we've made it sometimes and see you. You're incredible, compassionate, intentional love that you have for them. Lord, you are good. Your mercy endures forever. And for that, we give you thanks. We come to the part of the service that we will be lighting candles. On the one hand, it's an incredibly beautiful symbol. This idea of light coming into the darkness. It's beautiful. On the other hand, this is the part of the service that can literally go up in flames. So, a couple things that I would ask you to do. If you are the person with the candle that's lit, just hold it straight up and let the person that's unlit tip into it. If you've got more hair than me, I'd keep it away from the rest of the hair. I didn't pay attention to that one year, and look what happened. So I'll be going down the center aisle with the candle. I'll be giving it to the people. We'll pass it out to the side. As we do so, we'll be singing and celebrate the fact that light has come into the darkness in the form of Jesus. Friends, as you go, may you be found wise. Wise enough to continue to seek, humble enough to kneel before the newborn king, and courageous enough to allow your life to be transformed forever. And may we settle for nothing less. Go in peace, serve the Lord, and a very merry Christmas.